You're listening to Vatican Radio. How can we measure the well-being of society? Can happiness be used as a measure of the economy? Those questions were at the heart of a conference held here in Rome on Tuesday at the headquarters of the De La Salle Brothers, organised by the embassies of Costa Rica and Great Britain to the Holy See, together with the Pontifical Council for Culture. The meeting focused on the attempt to measure what matters to promote greater well-being in society. Using a series of social and environmental factors, as well as the traditional economic indicators offered by a nation's gross domestic product, researchers discuss the tools they're developing to measure the happiness of individuals and, as a consequence, the well-being of countries around the world. Glenn Everett is Director of Wellbeing for the Office of National Statistics in the UK. He told me more about his work.
We use three significant pillars, we tend to refer to them. One is the environment, the other two are the economy and social. So between those three pillars, we don't give a weight to each of them to say one's more important than the other. What we tend to call it is the triple bottom line. We need to consider all three of those areas with all our policies and what we do.
Many people would describe the areas that you're looking at, as opposed to just the economy, as the moral issues, the ethical issues. Is this the correct way to define, perhaps, the indicators that you're looking at?
I don't think it's just about the moral issues. What we're trying to do is get the wider measures for people to consider really what matters to people, more than GDP. GDP is often, it's important what it doesn't measure. Yeah, some of the issues about childcare, adult care. And we're taking some of the national accounts or GDP measures further to actually look at the distributions and how the wealth, so to speak, is distributed.
Another important factor that isn't measured by GDP is the voluntary sector, the whole charity sector. There's been a lot of talk here about how giving can perhaps make people happier than just taking.
Part of our evidence has been that giving does have quite an impact on people's feeling of worthwhile or life satisfaction. And the whole measurement of voluntary work is part of our program of work of developing good measures of that and how we integrate it. It isn't part of the normal structure or framework of national accounts because it's considered a non-market activity. But similarly, things like doing your own cooking or cleaning, as well as your childcare or adult care, and we're developing measures of those to go alongside the more standard measures of GDP.
Finally, the whole question of religion or spirituality. How much have you found that this does play a part in people's sense of well-being, of their happiness?
From the consultation we had quite a lot of responses about spirituality or religion. What we're finding, we haven't got an indicator of it as yet, but trying to find a good measure of religious affiliation or the extent of spirituality in people's lives is a big challenge. We're aware of it and we're trying to see what we can do to actually record and put that into our set of measures of national well-being.
Reflecting on the meaning of the word happiness, the president of the Pontifical Council for Culture, Cardinal Gianfranco Ravasi, spoke of the practical physical needs that provide people with a sense of happiness, but also of the spiritual interior elements that constitute a deeper, longer-lasting sense of well-being. This holistic vision of the human person is what leads the Church to increasingly raise its voice in the area of economic and social justice, as Richard Rowse from the Council for Culture explains.
If we look at GDP, we're looking at a financial instrument, which is very interesting, it's very materialistic, but beyond the finance there's also the people. And we want to look at where people are, where their priorities are, where their happiness is, where their well-being is. And so various economic institutions are developing instruments, and we would like the Church's voice to be present to ensure that there's the right vision of humanity, the right vision of what it means to be human.
Certainly this is a theme which Pope Francis and Pope Benedict before him have been emphasising very, very strongly.
Yes, it's not just economics, it's people. Who is the person we have before us? What are their hopes, their aspirations? What are their fears? What are their anxieties? We want to be present in that conversation.
It's certainly an important conversation, but how do you get those messages heard, if you like, at the very top of the financial, the political decision-making structures?
Well, here we have a good example of that. We have from the UK the National Wellbeing Office, which is responding to the Prime Minister. It's working very closely with the Statistics Office. And it's using indexes which it's reinventing every day. So we want the questions that they're asking people to find out their understanding of whether people are happy or whether there's a sense of well-being, whether there's a kind of moral and ethical dimension to life which is figuring in those statistics. We would like to be part of that.
It's not just the church or faith groups which are focusing on the deeper search for contentment in our increasingly secular and consumer-driven societies. The global economic crisis, which continues to keep countries in recession, laid bare the destructive effects of policies based exclusively on profits and financial gain. Increasingly, governments and international institutions are joining the search for new tools to measure more meaningful and equitable economic progress. Tools like the Happy Planet Index, drawn up by the New Economics Foundation. Dr. Sammah Abdallah is senior researcher at that London-based foundation.
The Happy Planet Index is a very simple index. It's an index which tries to question some of the ways that we measure progress at the moment, particularly, I guess, questioning our focus on GDP, gross domestic product. What it does is it measures three things: people's subjective well-being, so how they feel about their lives, their life expectancy, and their ecological footprint. The first two things, life expectancy and subjective well-being, are the things that people want. You know, they want more of. They're things that people are trying to achieve. But of course, those things come at an ecological cost. And so what we try to do is look at which countries achieve high levels of well-being, but with low environmental impact, with low ecological footprints. And the reason we think it's important to look at the ecological footprint is because if you look at a lot of countries which do have high levels of well-being, let's say most of Europe, USA, countries with relatively high levels of well-being, their environmental impact is so great that if all countries in the world, for example, were to consume like people did in the USA, then we would need four planets to sustain us. So that's why we take the well-being and we divide it by the ecological footprint, produce our planet index.
If we look at that list, we see Costa Rica right at the very top. Tell us a little bit about how the factors, clearly ecology is a big factor in this then.
Yeah, I mean, well, first thing to say is actually Costa Rica does well on all three measures. So if you compare it with the USA, for example, Costa Rica has higher levels of life expectancy and higher average levels of life satisfaction than the USA. In the last Happy Planet Index we did in 2009, Costa Rica actually had the highest levels of subjective well-being in the world. So it does well already on those things. What separates Costa Rica from the USA or many other rich countries is the ecological footprint. So Costa Rica's ecological footprint is one quarter that of the USA's. So here is a country which is achieving same, even slightly higher levels of well-being for one quarter of the environmental price. How do they do it? I mean, there's a lot of factors which are quite important. We think that if we look purely at the environmental side of things, then the fact that 99% of their energy is produced from renewable resources means that they can actually have a fairly high level of sort of consumption without having such a high level of environmental impact. But it's not that they necessarily have to have high level of consumption to achieve well-being, because at the same time as having decent standard of living, they're also able to preserve their ecological richness, their social well-being. And speaking in the Vatican, I would say that perhaps still having a sense of purpose, which comes through religion, is probably important as well.
Looking at Britain started quite low down the index. It seems to be moving up a bit. What is this due to?
We're a little bit cautious about comparing the index from year to year because, unfortunately, we've had to use different data each time. So we do have to be a little bit cautious about making those comparisons. But having said that, one thing that the UK has done is it has its ecological footprint has fallen since we started doing this in 2006. Perhaps it's partly due to the Climate Change Act. There is a process whereby the UK is trying to reduce its emissions. The important thing there to say is that it's not just about the emissions in terms of the factories or the cars that are pumping out carbon dioxide in the UK. It's also about our consumption patterns, because if we stop producing, let's say, televisions in the UK, then our carbon emissions in the UK will go down. But if we carry on buying the same number of televisions which are produced in China, producing the same amount of emissions, if not more, because their factories may not be as efficient, then actually our impact on the planet is greater. So while carbon emissions in the UK, in terms of the production, have fallen quite a bit, our carbon emissions in terms of what we consume haven't fallen quite as fast.
You're talking about, as you say, part of this equation is measuring the subjective sense of well-being as it's experienced by people. How do you feel that you are actually able to measure those kind, that kind of very subjective sensation of how happy somebody feels?
Well, the important thing to remember is that subjective well-being is subjective in two senses. So if I were to ask you about, you know, how much crime there is in your neighbourhood, then what you say could, you know, you'll tell me how much there is, and it could be wrong or right. You could actually get it right, that you know how much crime there is out there, or you could say something which is completely separate from the objective reality out there. So in that sense, that's perhaps one of the reasons why people are suspicious of subjective measures, because sometimes the objective reality is out there and people can be wrong. But when you're asking about how someone feels, the reality is something that's actually inside them. So it's actually quite hard to be wrong about how you feel, because how you feel is inside you. So actually, you know, you're more likely to be wrong if you try to guess it from the outside. So that's why we think that measuring subjective well-being, how people feel, by asking them how they feel, is the best way to do it. Of course, one has to be, you know, cautious about how one interprets the data and how much faith one gives towards it. But we have seen over the years a growing body of evidence demonstrating that the data, you know, when you ask people how they feel, the data we get out of that is valid and it's robust and it can be used to, and it predicts the future. So people who say they are happier live 7 years longer, for example. They're more likely to then go on and find a job. There's all these sort of impacts on the future in terms of one's own life, and it correlates with all sorts of other things that we know are important. So we're quite confident this is data that we can use.
You're presenting this index here in Rome, in the Vatican, with Cardinal Rivasi from the Pontifical Council for Culture. How much, then, do religion and spirituality count in terms of measuring this sense of well-being?
Well, you can do it in two ways, I guess. One approach is to say, well, we need to measure that spirituality. And I think that's it's an entirely valid approach, and we need to actually sort of look at sort of... Because if we do that, then we can actually look to see what's, you know, in detail, look to see what's happening. Coming from a secular organisation, I guess we're a little bit more cautious about pushing for the measurement of spirituality. But what we do know is very important is sense of purpose. One of the strongest theories, which is a humanist theory about people's well-being, says that people have three psychological needs once they meet their basic needs of, you know, food and shelter. The psychological needs are relatedness, so social relationships, a sense of autonomy, so a sense of what you do in your life is you, that you feel sort of some kind of some choice in your actions. And then the third one is a sense of competence, a sense of purpose. For a lot of people in today's society, perhaps in a society which has become more secular, and where people's only sense of purpose seems to be about consuming, accumulating wealth, religion is certainly one way that people can reconnect with a sense of purpose. I don't think it's the only way, but I think it's one way.
My thanks there to Dr. Samah Abdallah from the New Economics Foundation, and earlier you heard Richard Rouse from the Pontifical Council for Culture, and Glenn Everett, Director of Wellbeing for the UK's Office of National Statistics.